Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Once again, it's that time again. 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and this is the FSP Crew Show. I am your host, JT. I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff the Joker. And as usual on the FSP Crew Show, we engage in conversation and give you information about the crazy world or whatever kind of world you want to call it, or fantasy sports, and sprinkle with a little politics. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to me, Jeff. We also have a chat room that's open for your pleasure. Any and all subjects are welcome in that. Questions, statements, comments, whatever you want to do in a chat room, it's there. Rather than hear me anymore for a short time, let's get down to business here. We're going to be talking about, quite naturally, the game. That's tonight, the weekly Thursday night game on the NFL Network between the Saints and the Falcons. And for those that are in fantasy football leagues, some of you, your leagues are starting playoffs this week. So hopefully you
are. Playoffs!
Excuse me?
Playoffs!
And hopefully some of you are in position to be in playoffs and not into that dreaded consolation round, which is basically it's just to make you feel good, like you're doing something, but you're just treading water because you're not doing anything if you're in the consolation. If you're not playing for any kind of money leagues, if you're not playing for the money, or if you're not playing for the title, in my opinion, you're just treading water. And it's just to satisfy your own ego if you're not into the playoffs. But we're also going to be talking about, besides that, we're talking about the founder, the guy who helped get free agency and the big payoffs for baseball players, Marvin Miller. And also in that vein, we're going to be talking about the list of Hall of Famers that came out, and there's some interesting names on that list that I think we may be talking about. And we're going to talk about a guy from LSU that's been in a whole lot of trouble, the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, that is going to be taking moving his talents to the next level, or trying to. So without further ado, I've talked enough. Let's bring in my co-host, Jeff the Joker. Talk to me, Jeff. How you doing?
Hey, Jerry. Hey, everybody. Glad to be here.
All right, Jeff. Let's start off, like I said, talking about the tonight's football game. It's going to be points galore, Saints versus the Falcons in the ATL, in the dirty. And the Saints and the Falcons always put up on the show, because you got Drew Brees and company on one end, and you got the no-huddle offense and Matty Ice, Matt Ryan on the other end with his dynamite wide receivers. I see points galore. Hopefully somebody has, you or I or whoever's listening to us that's in fantasy, has a piece of the action, especially if it's the quarterbacks or the wide receivers. I'm not going to name the – or even the tight ends. You know, I mean, you got – Drew Brees and, like I said, Matt Ryan, and then you got Jimmy Graham, and then you got Tony Gonzalez, and then you got Marcus Colston and Lance Moore, and then you got Julio Jones and Roddy White. Man, that's a lot. That's a whole lot. Before I bring it to you, Jeff, let me bring in our other co-host, who's a little late, but that's okay. The guy from the D.C. area who happens to be, unfortunately, a Dallas Cowboy fan, Black the Bookie, talk to me.
What's going on, fellas? What's going on?
Hey, Black. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem, man. You know I had to be here. It's a critical week of fantasy football, critical week of football, critical in basketball. My Wizards finally got a win. Nationals pull off a trade. I'm ready to talk some sports, man.
Okay. Hey, you know what? You know, we are going to be talking some baseball. So when we get to that part of it, you can tell me what's going on with that because I didn't know this, but you can. So when we get to that.
I actually was going to ask you because I don't know this guy, so I was going to get some info from you. Apparently he's a center fielder from the Twins.
Hold on a minute here. Let me All right, let's do this. Let's talk about the game. I already named the cast of characters on both ends. I'm not sure if any of you guys have any of these characters on any of your fantasy teams. Hopefully you do. Give me your thoughts on tonight's game and the fantasy implications of any of these players. I'll give it to Jeff first, and then we go to Black.
I mean, you know, you play fantasy football, you got to love a team like the Saints and that offense. But, you know, it's not always easy because, what's the saying, you know, Breeze has a lot of mouths to feed. So, you know, you want almost any skilled player, but from week to week you don't know who the guy's going to be because he's got that many options. But still, that's an offense you want part of. And I got Breeze in one league, so I'm hoping he throws a few scores tonight and puts up a lot of yards. I'll tell you, you know, these Thursday night games, once in a while, if you have one of these guys on your team and he's a marginal guy, a guy who you don't always start every week, it forces you to make that decision 3 days early because I do have Jaquizz Rodgers in one league. I don't usually start him, but it'd be nice if I had him on my bench Sunday morning in case of emergency, but boom, thanks to the Thursday night game, it's almost like I don't even have him this week.
Right. Black?
Well, I'm going to have to go a different direction. Unfortunately, I'm playing my good co-host here, and I hope Breeze has a terrible night. Even though I would like him to feed the mouth known as Jimmy Graham, which I'll take all night. But, yeah, this should be a very exciting game, a rivalry game. I'm still not sold on Matty Ice, as you call him. I still call him Matty Slush until he wins some playoff games. But it should be an exciting game.
Okay. Since we are all in the same division, and it happened to be quite naturally in the same fantasy league, we are running neck and neck. We're running neck and neck to see who gets the last spot because Jeff has it now. I'm right behind him, and Black is right on his heels. So it's going to be very interesting and a very crucial week to see who gets an opportunity for the final prize to get into the playoffs. You got to be in it to win it. So it's going to be very interesting. I understand I'm going against the top guy in our division, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I am going against the top guy
in my division. So I'm
Perfect
going to wish
for that matchup as well.
I'm going to wish all of you, regardless of who gets in, good luck, because like I had said earlier. You're treading water if you're not into playoffs, in my opinion. You're really just stroking your ego from now on if you don't get into playoffs. The really interesting stuff starts when you get into playoffs. You're one and done. So we'll see what happens at the end after Monday Night Football to see who absolutely takes the next step and gets the last position into the playoffs. Anyway, speaking, let's also talk about this. We'll talk about the national trade. How's that? We'll go that route. I mean, we're going to be talking about baseball anyway, so let's talk about this because since you brought it up, the trade is this: the Nationals traded one of their top prospects, right-hander Alex Meyer, to the Minnesota Twins in exchange for center fielder Denard Span. Denard Span isn't a solid player, but the price they paid for him, I think, was too steep for the package they're getting. Meyer is was the club's 23rd overall pick in 2011, one of the game's hottest young pitching prospects. He stands a demure 6'9".
I was hoping that wasn't the guy. Was that the guy that played in the Legends game?
He's only 22 years old, has just 1 year of pro pitching experience to his name. His fastball already sits firmly in 90-94 mile-an-hour range, with a razor-sharp curveball, is one of the best in the minors. I'm trying to think. I think he's a top prospect, so I got to think he may be who you're thinking about, Black. They gave him up to get Denard Span, and I don't understand.
I had visions of him in Strasburg for a long time in the Nationals uniform. I can't believe it was this guy. If it's the same guy that played the Legends game, I'm very hurt right now.
I don't understand. Your GM was questioned about sitting in Strasburg, and now he gives up the top pitching prospect for a... not, in my opinion, middle of the road a stat outfielder. I don't understand. Don't understand. That makes no sense to me. Wow.
So this guy is going to start in center field. They're going to move Bryce from center field over to right. They're going to put Worth back over in his natural position and left, which means that Morris could be out.
There's a possibility. Who plays first base?
I think the possibility they bring LaRouche back, or LaRouche. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right.
Okay.
They bring LaRouche back, and Herb Moss could be out.
Because doesn't Moore play first base too?
Yes, he does.
Okay. Who had a better idea? I know Moore was hurt for the earlier part of the year, so.
I know he was hurt earlier, but the rumblings down here is that they want to bring LaRouche back, so it looks like Moore could be the odd man out. But I can't believe he just gave me that pitch his name. I was looking forward to seeing that guy pitch.
Well, you still can see him pitch if you go to Minnesota.
No, I don't want to see him pitch in Minnesota. I wanted to see him in the Nationals uniform.
He's not going to be in a Nationals uniform. He's going to be in a Twins uniform, and I think the infielders and outfielders that are going to play behind him are going to be smiling, because this kid seems like he's a real 6'9", man. This guy is a huge
man. I saw him in the Legends game. They couldn't hit him. They could not hit him.
Wow. Wow. Oh, well. He's going to the American League Central, I guess it is, which is not real strong division. Minnesota, White Sox, Detroit, and I think who else is in there? Cleveland. So that's not a real strong division, and we'll have to wait and see. You may try following him. Guy's name is Alex Meyer, so he'll be with the Twins and see what happens, see if he pans out, and you'll see how Denard Span plays. With that being said, we're talking about baseball. Let's move on to a trailblazer in the name in baseball, who passed away recently, in a, 2 days ago. Executive director of the Major League Baseball Players Association from 1966 to 1982. We're talking about Marvin Miller. And under his direction, the Players Union was transformed into one of the strongest unions in the United States. And Marvin Miller, along with Babe Ruth and Jackie Robinson, is one of the two or three most important men in baseball. I know, well, I should say I know. The present-day player, back in 1966 to 1982, the average player's salary rose from $19,000 to $326,000 a year. Now, that's all due, partially all due, with a great part of it due to Marvin Miller and his helped to strengthen the Major League Baseball Players Association. And all these players are getting tons and millions of dollars now for crazy amount of years. I think they offered David Wright $140 million for 7 years or something like that. All should pay homage pay respects to this man, because if it wasn't for Marvin Miller, these guys wouldn't be in their huge mansions and Bentleys right now. You guys got any comments on anything of what I just said?
No, I totally agree. And, the player should acknowledge the Trailblazers. And didn't Kurt Flood pass away a few years ago? I don't think they ever honored him, and Kurt Flood was, I think, the first player to challenge what they used to call back then the reserve clause, which
yep.
prohibited free agency, and, he ended up losing years out of his career because he stood up and fought it, and because of him making a stand, a lot of other guys were able to become very wealthy, and he died practically unknown.
Right. Black.
Oh, man. May it rest in peace. You got to show love to the Trailblazers. Did a lot for the game. Hopefully there'll be a moment of silence at all the games, football, baseball, whatever, for this guy this year.
Yeah, Marvin Miller. I remember Marvin Miller. I'm an old guy. I shouldn't say it like that, but I remember when this was all taking place, and these guys were going through all kinds of strikes. He led him through three union strikes in 72, 80, and 81. And then two lockouts in 73 and 76. So there was a lot of challenging of the union and see who's going to be the top dog between the owners and the players. And to this day, for the most part, the players still hold that probably the strongest union in the all of the major sports. Definitely stronger than pro football. Quite naturally, definitely stronger than the NHL. Federal mediator couldn't even help them. They're still having turmoil, even with a mediator. And the NBA is probably second strongest behind Major League Baseball. So Marvin Miller, I doubt if he's in the Hall of Fame. If he's not, he should be. Let me put it that way. So with that being said, let's move on to the what I wanted to talk about. Let's do this. Where am I at here? Let me get this together here. Okay.
Yes, where are you, Mr. Texan?
Where am I? I'm right here, man. And guess what? All these guys, Mr. Dallas, they all have something in common here, and I'm going to name them all. Sandy Alomar Jr., Jeff Bagwell, Craig Biggio, Barry Bonds, Jeff Cirillo, Royce Clayton, Roger Clemens, Jeff Conine, Steve Finley, Julio Franco, Sean Green, Roberto Hernandez, Ryan Klesko, Kenny Lofton, Edgar Martinez, Don Mattingly, Fred McGriff, Mark McGuire, Jose Mesa, Jack Morris, Dale Murphy, Rafael Palmeiro, Mike Piazza, Tim Raines, Reggie Saunders, Curt Schilling, Aaron Saleh, Lee Smith, Sammy Sosa, Mike Stanton, Alan Trammell, Larry Walker, Todd Walker, David Wells, Rondell White, Bernie Williams, and Woody Williams. Out of all those, and it's about a 37-man ballot, the most controversial are Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Sammy Sosa, quite naturally, where is he at? I just saw him. Where the heck is he at? I just saw him. Mark McGuire, who's been on a ballot before. Those guys are first ballot, among others, are first ballot, but those guys I named are the most controversial. Now, I'm asking you guys. Now, there's a few other guys here that I've heard rumblings about. I've seen, I've heard things about that they may have been on the juice also. I'm not going to name these guys yet until I talk to you about Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mark McGuire, and Sammy Sosa. Those four or five guys, whatever I named there, do any of those guys, first time, and Mark McGuire is not, but the other three are, do any of those gentlemen,
They'll be on that ballot for a while. There's no first time. There's no first time for any of those guys. They'll be on the ballot for maybe 5 to 10 years.
Really?
If they're even allowed to be on the ballot that long.
Really? What about Rafael Palmeiro? Somebody in the chat room mentioned Rafael Palmeiro. I think he's on that that list of guys that are controversial and steroid-taking guys.
We'll throw him along in there, too.
So you think it's going to take 5 or 10 years for any of these guys who, for the most part, should be first-time Hall of Famers, with the exception of Sammy Sosa, to be put into the Hall of Fame, or elected to get in the Hall of Fame? Is that what you're telling me, Black?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. When I saw those names come out, I said, man, not this year, not next year, not the year after next. It's going to be a struggle for those guys.
Now, I'm going to ask Jeff first, and then I'll pose the question. What do you think, Jeff?
You know, it's going to be a while. I'll agree with Black on that. And and I'm fine with it because I think the writers who do the voting, they're still trying to sort out the situation, and it's not, the thing is, innocent until proven guilty, but the thing is, this isn't a court of law. You're not sending someone to prison, so it's not the same burden of proof. And the thing is, if you keep a guy out, you could always vote him in. Once you put him in, you can't kick him out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm fine with that. Now, the thing is, and this has happened in recent years because of the steroid guys who otherwise would have been sure things, like McGuire, because of guys like him and Palmeiro, guys who were kind of borderline, like Jim Rice, were able to get in the Hall of Fame. And now it looks like this could help, Lee Smith, Tim Raines, Alan Trammell. And, the Hall of Fame voting is changed over the generations. Maybe even someone like Dale Murphy, who in the old days would have been voted in, but not by today's standards, because Dale Murphy has a couple of MVPs. So you could say, for 5 years or so, he was the best or one of the best players. But he didn't stick around compiling numbers till he was 40. Maybe he should have taken steroids, and then he would have had the 3,000 hits and the 500 homers. So he didn't have the career accomplishments, but he was dominant, you know. But they seem now to more reward the guys who stick around a long time and put up those kind of numbers.
Well, my question is this, and I may be playing devil's advocate, but a guy like Roger Clemens or Barry Bonds, supposedly late in their careers or whatever amount in their careers, they were allegedly taking steroids, okay? But they compiled Hall of Fame numbers before they allegedly started taking steroids. My question is this. Besides that, some of these writers haven't gotten along, or like Clemens or Bonds, weren't too endearing to the baseball writers and media for the longest in their careers. And this is can be viewed as a, you know, excuse to pay them back also. You guys got any views on that?
The payback will be the 5 to 10 years. It's not longer that these guys are waiting to get out.
Okay. Now, like I said, none of these guys, neither one of these guys, two of the guys I'm talking about, in fact, three of the guys, Sosa, Clemens, and Bonds, they've been accused. They've gone to trial, but not been convicted. But they've been convicted in the court of public opinion, but they haven't been convicted in a court of law. So why is it fair to just naturally assume the worst in someone by saying, "Oh, you took steroids," when, like I said, these guys put up Hall of Fame numbers even before they were accused or allegedly accused of taking steroids at one point in their career? Anybody want to tackle that one?
I don't want to touch it. What about you, Joe?
You know, I'll go back to what I said before. It's a different burden of proof. I mean, think about it. At jobs, people get written up and get in trouble and even fired for stuff that would never hold up in court. I'm not saying it's right, but it's a different burden of proof, and it's a lot of it is common sense. I mean, I don't personally like Barry Bonds. I doubt he's losing any sleep over it. And and despite the steroid use, say what you want, that guy's really got a pair. He, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, they don't take the negative public opinion very well. Bonds could care less. I kind of respect that in a way, because a lot of guys would have cracked under that pressure, and he never has, because he just does not care what people think. He's never admitted it, but I mean, logically, you look at the guy. I mean, you look at him early in his career, middle of his career, all of a sudden, you know, in his mid-30s, his head and neck are enormous, and he goes from being a good power hitter to the best ever. Okay, it won't hold up in a court of law, but come on, he was on something. He had to be, you know. But he was, you know, most likely a Hall of Famer anyway. Supposedly, he started messing with the juice because he was jealous of all the attention that McGuire and Sosa were getting. And he was like, all right, well, I could do that too. And he did, you know.
Well, that,
there you go.
That's my point. Supposedly, and a lot of people have said this, not just me, that he put up Hall of Fame numbers before he was allegedly accused. And I think the same thing about Clemens. Before they were allegedly accused of using steroids, or it looked like it was obvious they were using steroids, these guys put up Hall of Fame numbers. So,
but I think some of it might be a control issue that the writers, you know, the guys who make the vote say, hey, this way, by keeping these guys out, we're helping to keep the sport clean. It's, you know, some of it's a control issue. You know,
you know, I've listened to some of these writers, some of these guys that have a vote in the Hall of Fame, and it's unbelievable. I don't know if you guys listen to it, and I don't know any names. I can't think of any guys' names right now, but I've listened to what they've said, and some of these guys are very pompous and think that their vote is like walking on water. So it's very subjective in my opinion. And if the guy, I understand that he may have taken steroids. He may not have been able to prove it, but if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, more likely it's a duck. But if they put up Hall of Fame numbers before they were allegedly taking steroids, how can you penalize a guy even though you think he's taking steroids? He's never been convicted of it. That Hall of Fame position. If he had it before, I understand he had it before. So you're going to penalize a guy because he had it before. And now he just exceeded what he had as Hall of Fame numbers. He exceeded that. So you're going to penalize him for that. In my opinion, if he had Hall of Fame numbers even before he got a suspicion of taking steroids, he's still a Hall of Famer. He just enhanced what he already had as in Hall of Fame numbers. I know people may disagree with that, but that's my feeling on it. There's some other guys on this list. Like, I think it's Jeff Bagwell or Craig Biggio. I think those two had a slight, or one of them, and I can't recall which one of them was, had a slight rumors or whatever that those guys may have been on the juice also, because their numbers at one point were higher than their regular stats were for their career. I don't know if anybody else heard what I've heard or read or seen on the internet or listened to the TV about these guys. And I think it was Biggio, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I think it was Biggio. They both played on the same team at one point, but I think it was Biggio. So, anybody?
Anytime your head grows a couple of head sizes, you're Mark McGwire, and you come in a little fragile guy, and you blow up to be the Incredible Hulk at the sixth. Come on, man. You don't have to be convicted, but you know something's going down.
Okay. There was slight rumblings, and nothing was ever proven or anything like that. That even Mike Piazza may be on the juice because, but I don't know if any of you guys heard that. I'm not putting anything that hasn't been talked about before out there, so that's why I'm asking you guys: have you heard anything about that before?
You know, that's one of the things I hate about performance-enhancing drugs. It puts a lot of guys under suspicion. I mean, I was once about 10 feet from Mike Piazza. I mean, he looked like a big guy, but he didn't look like steroid big. He didn't look impossible big. And mm-hmm. Now there was other rumors about Mike Piazza. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And those rumors, and believe me, I don't have a dog in this fight because I like Piazza. I was never a Met fan. But this, I know this is a stretch, but my buddy was friends with one of Piazza's brothers. It's not true. All that stuff they were saying about him when he was playing. And he's married to some former centerfold girl, and he's very happily retired at a young age in Florida. Good for him. And heck of a hitting catcher. He was a good defensive catcher, except for throwing out runners at second base. Was not his strong point. But I mean, just based on my gut, I don't think Piazza seemed to have unreasonable you know, unexpected. It wasn't like he showed up one year at spring training camp and put on 20 pounds of muscle. I don't think there was anything like that. I mean, the guy was always lifting since his career started, and he came up the hard way. He was drafted, I think, in the 50-something round, and you know, worked his way through the minors, you know, and he built himself up. He worked hard to make himself into a major league ball player.
Mm-hmm. The guy in the chat room. Joker, you probably see this too. He's posing the question: does the fact that A-Rod admitted he did them gave him a pass on the fact that he did them also? Meaning, just because he admitted he took them, does that give him a pass? So A-Rod, Yankee, Texan before that, he had Hall of Fame numbers supposedly before he took them. He said he only used him for 3 seasons. Well, three seasons, one season, he still said he used them. When he's eligible, does he get in first ballot, or is he going to have to do the same thing that Black is saying to these other guys 5 to 10 years down the road? And those 5 to 10 years down the road means that the turnover in the Baseball Writers Association is going to be, some of these guys are going to be passing, and there's going to be new ones coming up and seeing the stats of these guys versus being witness of these guys took steroids. Is that going to be the case in why these guys finally get in? Or why would they, if they don't get in first ballot, second ballot, and fifth ballot, what makes you think they're going to get in in the 10th year? Anybody want to pose that?
Well, yeah, I think you kind of answered your own question. There's always going to be a certain turnover of writers, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'm sure a lot of these guys hold on to the honor of being a voter until they die,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure it's probably just the way baseball fans and baseball writers are. It's probably a very traditional group. So it'll be a long wait, you know. Eventually, maybe, but it'll be a long wait.
Okay. Black, can anything you say about that?
I think that's a good admission by A-Rod to admit that he did. So I think that the writers will take that into consideration. But I still think it might be maybe five by A-Rod.
Really? And most of these guys, in fact, all these guys that we're talking about, especially the controversial guys, for the most part, have put Hall of Fame numbers up before they supposedly took steroids. So they're getting penalized for taking steroids late in their career and not appreciated for what they did earlier in their career, which was Hall of Fame numbers. See, I got the problem I have is this: in the so-called steroid era, everybody was doing it. Everybody was doing it, okay, for the most part. So most of these players, a lot of them, are in the steroid era. A lot of them, okay, not all of them, but a lot of them are in one form or another are in the steroid era. Even though some of them may not have gotten caught, but there's, in my opinion, there's a question of all these guys, because the fact is it's a steroid area and everybody was doing it. So all their numbers
were... There was no need to do it. If you wanted to get big like that, eat more proteins and hit the gym.
No,
no need for that.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but baseball at the time wasn't as popular. And during the steroid era, guys were offense was going crazy. The pitching suffered because all these hitters were hitting bombs, and there was a lot of power displayed from one team to another because all these guys were juiced up, and I wouldn't say all the guys, a lot of guys were juiced up. Okay. I can't make a blanket statement and say all of them. A lot of guys were juiced up. So you're only let me put it this: you're penalizing a few, but there was many more that were in there, just never got caught or never you could never see the visual symptoms of them taking steroids. And I'm not remiss in saying this, quite a few of these guys on this list of 37, other than the ones that we're talking about, may at one point or another took some type of performing enhancing drugs to help them in their career or help them at one point get over the hump. But they're not going to get penalized for it, or they were on the right side of the media, and they're not getting penalized for it either. Because I think a lot has to do with the media, and if you're a good guy to the media, I think they're going to give you a pass. But if you gave the media a hard time, this is retribution, and I really believe that this is retribution, an excuse to give it to you, and to give it to you for quite a while. So, and the prime example, like I keep on saying, the prime example is Roger Clemens, because Roger Clemens was not that affable to the media, and quite naturally, just like Jeff was saying before, Barry Bonds sure wasn't. I don't know if you guys want to have any comment on that, but I just had to get on my soapbox and say something about that. All right, since nobody wants to say anything about that, let's move on. And let's talk about this guy from a former player from LSU. We're talking about Tyrann Mathews. Announced his intent to apply for entry in the 2013 NFL draft. He's given up his final 2 years. I think he was a sophomore or whatever, and now he wants to go into the NFL draft. Black, I'm going to pose
yes,
this to you.
Sir, what do you want to pose?
What do you think of Mr. Tyrann Mathew saying he wants to go pro, and what do you think his chances are at making it to the pro game?
Well, he's an excellent athlete, but there are other problems there. There are other problems there. There are problems that let him be kicked out of school twice. And if he thinks that he's going to just go to the NFL and thinks he's going to do things that he wants to do, he'll be out of the NFL as soon as he enters.
Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, he is obviously an excellent athlete, and I haven't really thought about him since I heard he got kicked out of LSU. I mean, now someone will take a chance on him. He's got that kind of ability, but they're getting a guy with 2 years college experience and a year of rust. I don't like that, and he's raw, but the thing is, he could earn his keep in the NFL doing returns while he's learning how to play cornerback on the NFL level. And somebody, you know, maybe the bad news Bengals, somebody will take a chance on him, you know. Maybe they can room him with Pac-Man Jones, you know, so who knows.
As long as they keep him out of Dallas, because I don't need him teaming back up with Claiborne and getting Claiborne in trouble. As long as he stays out of Dallas, I'm fine.
Well, I mean, don't you think that if he teams up with Claiborne, that there'll be a dynamic duo because they know each other's tendencies and be able to feed off each other if he plays in Dallas along with Claiborne?
No.
No.
No,
huh?
No.
Okay.
We have enough headaches with this. We don't need another one in the honey garden.
All right. Well, we're going to the
And please explain to me why Popovich is sitting Tim Duncan, Matt Ginobili, and Tony Parker tonight.
Well, I'll give this to Jeff. Jeff, do you think that that's a conspiracy theory, that he wants to throw a game for one particular person if he's sitting all three of his all-stars at one night?
It's a possibility. You know, it is a possibility. You know, I mean, you wouldn't believe. I mean, I saw somebody after the Ravens picked up that impossible 4th and 29. They thought the game was fixed just after seeing that. I mean, I thought that what defense was that? Was that the Tennessee defense? No, it was San Diego defense. They looked horrendous. But I think, though, to fix an NFL game, people got big mouths. You know what I mean? And it's hard to imagine, you know, 11 guys on that defense, or even a few guys on defense, plus, you know, their buddies and their girlfriends, their wives, their brothers, their sisters. Word would travel like wildfire if somebody was ever going to pull off a stunt like that, you know?
Wow.
But people try. People try.
Well, since you brought it up, Jeff, I'm gonna ask about it and get you guys' opinion on I don't know if you guys saw the game, but with the Baltimore Ravens trailing in this game, and faced with a 4th and 29, Joe Flacco throws a screen pass to Ray Rice. And Ray Rice proceeds to go 29 and a half yards to get the first down through the San Diego defense. Was it a generous spot? Or besides being an inept and defense of San Diego, at the end of that play, was it a generous spot, or did he in fact actually get that 29 and a half yards?
That was a very, very generous pass. Extremely generous pass.
I mean, that whole play was unreal, because sometimes if a quarterback's under pressure, if it's a 3rd and 10 and he's got to get rid of it, he'll hit the wide receiver, you know, maybe 8 yards past the line of scrimmage and think, okay, maybe the guy can dance for a couple yards. Well, you know, Rice had to dance for about 27 yards. I mean, that's unheard of, absolutely unheard of. But, you know, those Rutgers guys are really good like that, you know.
Well, let me ask you this other question now. We saw that play. Is that the end of Mr. Norvell Turner as the coach of the San Diego Chargers? Is like that? Is that the proverbial nail in the coffin? Has he officially lost that team after that, or what?
I'm afraid so. Usually, it's November when the Chargers start to roll, but that hasn't happened this season. So I like Norv. I think a lot of NFL coaches, head coaches, have stadium-sized ego. Norv never came across like that, but you know, there's talent on that team, and unless they win out, even then he might be out of a job. I mean, this is the same owner who fired Marty Schottenheimer after a 14-2 season. So, Norv, I think he's an okay head coach. He's probably more respected as a coordinator. Seems like a good guy, but I think it might be his the end of his head coaching career.
Black.
You know, I have all the greatest utmost respect for my man Norvell Turner. Who knows? I mean, he's lasted this long. Bad seasons he's had, and he's stuck around. So I'm not sure.
And maybe he has some pictures on someone. Because for the simple fact is, there is no way, and I've been saying this for years. It's not. This is not the first time I've said it. I've been saying this for years, that this guy's one of the worst coaches ever. How the heck he stayed in San Diego this long or even gotten other head coaching jobs and absolutely did the same job he did with this team, I have no idea. I'm totally surprised that he came back this year along with his GM, who's an absolute knucklehead, A.J. Smith. And I think he's I think he's history too.
Super Bowl rings carries clout. What can I say?
Yeah, well, not enough clout. Well, the clout's ran out. Let me put it that way. And I think the it's going to be a chain reaction. A coach that gets released in the East Coast, who's from the West Coast, will probably find a job in the West Coast. I'm talking about Andy Reid will probably more than likely get released from Philly, and it's a strong possibility that he could move. I'm just posing this. I saw this on the internet that he could move to San Diego as a coach because he's from California, and he probably could revive or put some spark in Philip Rivers' career versus what Norvell hasn't done recently. I think
Andy Reid has no business taking a job once he gets released from the league. That guy needs to just take a year off, clear his mind, recharge himself, and then think about coaching. He needs a year off. He needs a year off.
You think so? Well, you think
Andy Reid is burnt out at this point from his personal life, from the Eagles' standpoint. He just needs a break right now.
Okay. Jeff?
You know, it's, Black makes a good point. You know, you talk about these guys, and you know, you're always thinking about the X's and the O's. But unfortunately, Andy Reid had a tragedy that's bigger than football. So, you know, maybe taking a year off might really help the man and help his family. And I think he made a horrible decision hiring his offensive line coach as defensive coordinator. But still, overall, he won a lot of years in Philly, had a lot of good teams, seems like a good guy. You know, maybe not next year, the year after. You know, I'd like to see him get another shot if that's what he wants. Or who knows, he could even retire, maybe go into broadcasting or something. You know, and believe me, Philly's a tough place to coach. Philly's a tough place to do anything. So,
well, speaking of tough places, they've probably played one of the toughest schedules in the U.S. In college. I really don't like talking about this because I'm not a fan of this team at all. But when Oregon loses, when Kansas State loses, Alabama already had a loss. Georgia and Florida weren't really on the radar as having the goods to be what they, the number one, the dreaded reality of it, in my opinion, that
Are you about to speak about the Fighting Irish?
The Fighting Irish are number one. the BCS Harris poll, USA Today, and computer rankings all give the nod to Notre Dame as number one, which they should be because of the attrition or by sheer they're undefeated. All these other teams have one loss. So Notre Dame sits on top the college ranks, at the top in football right now, with the possibility if Alabama wins the SEC championship between Alabama and Georgia, but it's played in Georgia. So depending on who wins that, depends on who goes to play Notre Dame.
So whoever wins that game will roll Notre Dame in the championship game.
Well, you know, and I had talked to Vic about this on Saturday. Or Sunday, whatever day it was. I think it was Sunday, whatever day it was. And he had said that Alabama would probably beat Notre Dame, but Georgia is a very inconsistent team, and he, if I'm not mistaken, I think he told me they're I know Alabama's defense is shaky, but he says Georgia's defense is shaky too. Am I right assuming that, Black?
It's shaky, but they have a strong, strong running game. Very strong running game.
Okay. So you think Notre Dame has a very strong defense, led by their Heisman Trophy candidate, Tal. Do you think because of their defense that defense wins championships?
Defense will get exposed playing the SEC team. Notre Dame's schedule wasn't at all tough this year.
I thought they played one of the toughest schedules in the country.
Notre Dame?
Yes.
Was all the Pac-10 teams that play on the schedule? Did you call that tough?
I think for a lot of years, the Notre Dame schedule was pretty weak with three service academies. But this year, if you look at those teams, you know, I mean, yeah, they had Stanford, they had USC. But, you know, well, first of all, they could only play who's on the schedule. The Notre Dame schedule actually did look pretty tough. Some of those teams looked tough before the season and were disappointed, like I think Michigan State. And believe me, I'm no big Notre Dame fan, but I got to give them credit. But the thing, and this is why a lot of people dislike Notre Dame, is because they're always getting the breaks. They're always getting the benefit of the doubt. They're the only school that gets a seat at the BCS table.
Right.
And that rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And the thing I don't like about Notre Dame, and I understand they're kind of like the Yankees, and when Notre Dame is relevant, it kind of sparks a lot of interest. I think it's ludicrous that they have their own TV deal. I don't blame it on them because, well, what school would turn that down? But their seasons where they're not even 500 and they're still on TV every week.
Right.
And I cringe. I'm like, I don't want to see this lousy team. And, you know, I mean, yeah, people have that kind of interest. But when they're not winning, most fans, especially on the East Coast, do not want to see those games. And that's kind of, you know, why they rub a lot of folks the wrong way. But I got to give them credit where it's due this year. That defense looks real stout. And they got the best team since the Lou Holtz era. And that's tough because, you know, they say one of the positives about Notre Dame is, you know, you got to be a decent student and you can't be in a lot of trouble if you want to play ball at Notre Dame. They got a clean program.
Okay.
Hope it's not a fraud like Penn State, you know?
Yeah, right?
Or the undefeated Ohio State. Shout out to Urban Meyer.
if they weren't on the bad blacklist of the NCAA, they'd probably be playing for the National
Championship. No, they wouldn't. They all know how to solve schedule.
Okay. Well, I'm just putting it out there. All right, we got a minute and a half left in the show. I want to thank you guys for showing up. Tune in next week, same time, same station, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Tomorrow, more than likely because of my job schedule, I will not be on with Mac Williams, but Mac Williams probably will be with Vic. That'll be at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, on Saturday, I probably won't be there, too, due to my business schedule. I'll probably tie it up again on the Saturday show, but FSP will be in effect with Vic Gardner at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. But I will be on Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, on the Master Plan. Some of you, like I said, are in the playoffs. Some of you are trying to get in the playoffs, like me and my two co-hosts are. And I'll be trying to give you some players out there that you may want to use at the last minute if you are scrounging for points somewhere. I'm trying to help me and also anyone else that's trying to get in the playoffs. And then from then on, I'll give it to my two co-hosts, Black first, and then we'll close it out with Jeff, and we'll be out of here. Talk to me, guys.
All right. Well, last week of fantasy football, I want to wish everybody luck. I want to wish all my co-hosts luck. People in your leagues, if you're down to the wire like we are, man, just, I don't know. You can't do it. Too much overanalyzing. You just got to plug and play and see what happens. Good luck.
Jeff?
I wanted to mention something we didn't get to on the show, that the retired boxing champion Hector Camacho was removed from life support and passed away. And I'll be honest, I wasn't a big fan, but he was a very entertaining fighter, a very colorful character. And there's a story that a couple of women, both claiming to be his girlfriend, got into a fight at his wake.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, hopefully Camacho's up there in heaven smiling down on all of us. And it's a real shame. He's only 50 years old. And what a flashy, colorful guy. He was kind of polarizing. A lot of people liked him. A lot of people didn't. And I'm sure his wake was memorable. How many people have a fight at their wake? But that's the macho man for you, you know.
there's one other thing I wanted to mention, Jeff, and we had talked about it just off air, and I forgot to mention it, but I'm going to mention it before we get out of here. Black, I don't know if you know this or not, at the last Jet game between them and the New England Patriots, I think it was, right? The Jets put on such a bad performance that a longtime diehard fan called Fireman Ed, who leads the Jet fans in the stadium every game for God knows how long, good or bad, didn't have his fireman hat on, was sitting in his seat, not on anybody's shoulders, with a ball cap turned backwards, looking like he lost his best friend, and then at halftime, which he never, ever does, leaves the stadium at halftime, closes his Twitter account, and I think he has quit the Jets. And Jeff has some other news about Fireman Ed also. Talk to me, Jeff.
Well, I mean, I'm a Giant fan, not a Jet fan, but I live in the New York area. And right. I always liked Ed Anzalone, I think, was his running fireman, Ed.
Right.
People called him a mascot. He wasn't really a mascot. He was a super fan, and almost every
right.
team had someone like that. The Giants had the pizza man, you know. And Fireman Ed was loyal. He got the crowd going. The Jets offered him a job, to make him an official employee of the team, but he turned it down for personal reasons, I think to keep his integrity and avoid any conflicts of interest or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he, this guy was loyal through the 1-15 Rich Kotite season, and a real class guy, great fan. But the big mistake he made was he'd been wearing a number 42 jersey. The name of the running back from Englewood, New Jersey.
Harper.
Bruce Harper,
yes.
Was that his name? Right. He would wear the 42 jersey. He wore that jersey for decades. And recently, in support of Mark Sanchez, he switched to a Sanchez jersey, which, I mean, hey, if he wants to support Sanchez, I think he might have even been friendly with Sanchez or Sanchez's dad, because he and Sanchez's dad are both retired firemen.
Right.
I mean, he's got every right to have an opinion. He's got every right to support Sanchez, but he used very poor judgment switching to the Sanchez jersey. And then he switched, and then, with all due respect, I know you used to be a Jets fan. They were a real live bunch, if you know what I mean. And once he put on that Sanchez jersey, they all started giving him the business. And a lot of people think he works for the team, and he doesn't. He's a regular Joe, just like us, except maybe a little more famous.
Right.
And because he made the decision to put on the Sanchez jersey, the fans turned on him, and people were harassing him and trying to instigate fights and whatever. And it's such a simple thing, but he used very poor judgment. I mean, if this is the biggest mistake of his life, he's got a decent life, but he never should have done it. He should have stuck with the Bruce Harper jersey.
Right.
You know, and it's funny because I always wondered, you know, why the Harper jersey? How come not a Namath jersey or whatever? But, you know, just switching to the Sanchez jersey just made his life very difficult and put him in a bad spot. You know, I mean, people are trying to pick fights with him. And, you know, I mean, for all God, I wouldn't mess with him. But, you know, you don't even want to be in that situation. And then the Dolphins have a super fan who calls himself Big Papa Pump, which is ridiculous because the only Big Papa Pump I know is Scott Steiner, a pro wrestler. And let me tell you, Scott Steiner would go through this cat like a hot knife through butter. Because this cat, this Dolphins fan, you can look him up on YouTube. Big, he calls himself, he probably gave this name to himself, Big Papa Pump. I mean, this guy's a marshmallow. And he had the nerve, you can look it up on ESPN, to criticize Fireman Ed. And who are you? You know, I mean, and this Papa Pump. Yeah, he's in large and in charge. Yeah, in charge of the buffet table. I mean, I'm just not feeling it. And ironically,
well,
I think...
Well, y'all saw what I put in the filet pilot.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you know, the Jet fans, you know, needless to say, they got to leave their Thanksgiving dinner early to go to a game and then watch them get shellacked by the Patriots, you know. But, you know... And we can get into this another time because we got to wrap it up. But the Jets have that the Jet fans have that rowdy reputation. But also part of it is, you know, okay, you buy the ticket for $100. If the team stinks, of course you're gonna boo. Just don't get into the guys' families or say anything too bad. But not only do you got to pay $100 for the ticket, you got to spend big bucks for the PSL. And these guys look like a bunch of morons out there. They look like the Three Stooges, the Bad News Bears, you name it. And you go into debt to buy those stupid tickets, you know? No wonder the fans are going nuts. But I hate to say it, I used to respect Tannenbaum. I thought he drafted well, you know, the Jets GM. I thought he had the guts to pull off trades, but I think he started caring more. This might have been from ownership about getting headlines than winning games because of their roommates, the Giants. Thing is, all the Jets got to do is win. If they win, you know, the media and the fans will take care of itself. But for some reason, they think, you know, doing these big publicity moves like Tebow and moves like that are going to win games, and it's not working anymore.
Tebow, save us.
Yeah. With that being said, let's get the hell out of here. I got to get some rest, and I want to finish watching and relaxing this game and see if I can rack up some points in my fantasy leagues. So, guys, thanks for joining me tonight. For those who are listening, thanks for listening. And we're out of here for now. See ya.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew.
Yeah.
Check. Fantasy, sports, and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy, sports, and politics crew.
Yeah, come on.
Fantasy, sports, and politics crew.
Yeah.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.